Just want to give you a heads up. Today's episode is a little bit different than any of the episodes I've done. It's taking a bit of an investigative turn, but this is still a story about my life and something I can tell you about firsthand through an interview with a good friend of mine. It's a very interesting, twisty, turny story, and I hope you will listen and enjoy. Let's get into it.
I've been thinking about like, what should I say? Like what's okay, what's not, but I think I'll just tell it all.
In 2015, I was living in New York and working as a bartender while trying to get work as an actress. You're always meeting interesting people while you're bartending, but one chance meeting at the bar would forever be seared into my memory. That was the night I met Rasmus. It was important to me because we became great friends. But there was something else that made this chance meeting different from all the other chance meetings I had in New York. Rasmus was working for and living with Ghislaine Maxwell, the now convicted sex trafficker and accomplice to Jeffrey Epstein. So I asked Rasmus if he would be interested in talking with me about his time there. What I found was that I may have uncovered a much larger story, one that has never been reported on before, and that is the illegal employment of a network of young Swedish men by Ghislaine Maxwell. So let's start from the beginning. Going back to the time whenever we met, that was 2015?
For the first time, yes, that was 2015, I think, sometime in May.
You came into a bar where I worked on 23rd Street, and this incident has forever stuck in my mind because it was highly unusual, because you came in, you used a card that did not have a name on it, and that's not something you see every day, someone who opens a tab with a card that does not have a first and last name on it. So number one, that was unusual. And then once I spoke to you, I asked you what your name was. You told me the name, and it was not the same as the initials on the card.
Yeah.
So again, highly unusual. This does not happen every day in my bar. And, you know, as I got to know you, you told me that you were working for a socialite in New York City.
Yeah.
But the name of who it was never discussed. And I never asked you. But you always just told me, yes, I work for this rich lady. She's a socialite. And you never mentioned the name. So
I think she used the own word socialite to describe herself. That's why I used it, I think.
Okay. So was there a reason that you never disclosed her name just in casual conversation? Was that something you had been told to do? Or was that just your own, as you've stated before, your involvement with yourself, that you just weren't thinking about any, you know, her or what her deal was? It just wasn't important to you?
Well, both. First of all, of course, when she told me her name, I had no idea who she was. I never even thought about Googling her. That was just me being 24 years old and not like thinking about anything. But she had a talk with me. She like sat me down in Central Park. She and her boyfriend sat me down. And
the boyfriend was this Scott Borgeron or...
Scott. Okay. That's him. That's him. He sat me down and he told me, like, the woman that you're working for, living with, she's a very famous woman. So you can never say who she is and you can never bring people to the house and you have to be quiet about all this. And she's a very important woman. I'm like, sure. Of course, I understand she's important, especially to him. But I mean, the way she lived and the money she had. So I did not question that. I mean, he was very, like, he was an authority. He was a big guy and he was really making it clear. And I was like, yeah, sure. That might have been in the back of my mind that why I never told anyone. But it took a couple of years before, like, I understood, like, the whole picture, who she was. So it was quite a surprise. Yes. For me.
So, of course, in all of the time that, you know, we've talked about your employment up until from 2015 to 2019, I think it was never, you know, I never thought about and you never volunteered who it was that you had been working for. And then I think in 2019, you, what happened in 2019 that you sent me a message, I think, saying like, this is who I worked for. What was the moment that you realized that this was not an ordinary woman?
Well, it was as easy as I saw her on the news. And at that time, I think she was connected to Jeffrey Epstein, and it might have been when he died in prison, and they linked Ghislaine to him, and I understood the connection. And so I saw her on TV, and that's what when I found out. So of course, then I don't know if I told you right away, but of course I wanted to tell you, just so it was big news, but I didn't make too much fuss about it. I was just like a fun thing. But then I was just like scraping the surface. Then I actually knew, I heard like what she did, what she was like in trial for. So it just got bigger and bigger. First of all, like in 2019, I did not think that much about it. Just a fun thing to tell you.
I wouldn't say it's a fun thing, just an interesting, maybe a noteworthy thing.
That's a better word, most definitely. Yeah. Very noteworthy.
Okay, so let's go back to like personally how you came to be involved in this situation to begin with, because you are talking to me today from Sweden. You live in Sweden. You're from Sweden. How did you get involved with this woman?
Just by complete like accident, almost. So there was a guy I knew just by, we said hi out when we were out partying. So we were not connected in any other way, like not a deep connection. And he told me he was going to New York to work for a rich lady. And he told me she liked to have like Swedish young men in her house doing stuff for her, stuff just like getting her coffee, like looking after her dogs. That's all he told me. And I thought, well, that sounds awesome. And he was going there on a tourist visa, which is 3 months. And obviously you cannot work during that time. And he said, I'm going to be there for 3 months and then we need a new guy. And I guess I fit the description. Because all the guys who has been there looked like, well, they looked like really, really Swedish, like blonde, tall, blue eyes. So we all had that in common. And I was blonder back then. And I didn't think much of it when he asked me, like he said, you can go after me if you want to, like I'll be in touch with you and I'll contact you when I'm about to go home. And mind you, this was like in a drunken state. We were just out like partying. And I was like, sure, like stuff you say when you're drunk. And those 3 months went by and he actually contacted me and he said, do you still want to go? And I was at a time in my life, I was only 24. I didn't have that much responsibility at home, so I could go. And I said, sure. And after just a few days, her assistant, Dana, had like an interview with me through, I think it was Skype, like a short interview, like on a really like shaky line with bad lighting. And she asked me just like, do you like dogs? And could you come this date? And it was over in 5 minutes, I think. And
that was the like, only right, qualifications, so, though. Do you like dogs? And can you come on this day?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we had like a video thing so she could see me. I have no clue if that was like, if that played into the deal. I don't know. I guess the recommendation from the guy who was there. Maybe that was enough too. But yeah, it was a very short conversation. And so I booked a ticket and they told me, like, because sometimes if you're traveling from Europe or, well, I guess other continents too, they might ask you, like, when you enter, like an airport in the US, they ask you, like, what are you going to do here? And how long are you going to stay and how much money do you have? Sometimes they do that. So I was prepared to stay. Well, I'm going to stay here. And here it was a hotel on Times Square. So I was not going to say that I would stay with Ghislaine. But they never asked me, but that was still the instructions.
So who gave you that instruction? And did they tell you the specific hotel to stay?
Well, I think it was actually the guy who was there before me. He told me, but he must have been told by Dana, the assistant. But I remember he told me because he used the same hotel just to make things easier.
I see. But you, of course, never went to the hotel. When you got there, you went straight to her place?
Yeah. The guy who was there before, he met me up and we overlapped for a few days. So he would like teach me or just show me things. I think he overlapped me by 2 days. So we met, can't remember where, but I took the train from Newark into somewhere on Manhattan. He met me, never been there before. So it was dark and it was very cold and windy. But and we went there. We took a cab to a very fancy address.
That fancy address was 116 East 65th Street between Park and Lexington Avenues. There sits a sprawling five-story townhouse with 5 bedrooms, 6 baths, a finished basement, and 8 wood-burning fireplaces. Maxwell bought the property in the year 2000 for just under $5 million. By 2015, she was already feeling the heat from Virginia Giuffre's accusations against her and listed the property for sale that year in April. The property was sold the following year for $15 million.
I don't think she was home that night, but I met her the following morning.
Okay, so tell me what the first meeting was like.
Yeah, so that was the day after I came, and I was nervous. I mean, looking at the house, I realized that, well, probably a powerful and a rich woman, and I have no idea who someone like that will behave. So I was on my best behavior, at least. And she sat by her office desk on the first floor. And I guess just said hello. And kind of the first thing she said, well, she asked me, do you have a passport? And I was like, is this a trick question? I was like, yes, I have a passport. And then she said, now you have 2 passports. And and I was like, what does she mean? But play along, of course. I wanted to present myself well. And she told me, well, you have to register on my website at the Terramar Project and you will get a second passport. It was just signing up for a newsletter. So for her project, the Terramar Project, which was trying to, I guess, save the ocean. That's right. Yeah. So she was pushing that pretty hard.
That's kind of like an awful joke. Like, get your second passport by signing up for the newsletter.
Yeah.
Is that funny?
I have no clue. I don't know if they had a thing like a passport to.
Passport to the healthy oceans.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That was the idea. And I got those newsletters for quite a while before I unsubscribed.
So after, you know, you had this initial meeting, what was the next step? What was the expectation?
Well, kind of the first like assignment was to get her a coffee from Starbucks. And she always had the same coffee. I think it was like a skim milk latte. I think it was that, because it sounds very familiar when I repeat it. And it was the same every morning. She wanted it by, I think, like 9 o'clock. So that was the first thing. Well, not that hard, but she wanted that. And of course, I mean, well, when you're in front of her, she come off as like powerful. And with obviously all the money and connections, she has a confidence that is, well, I guess at that time I listened to her. So I don't know how far I would go, but at this time it was just bring her coffee, and I did. But then there was also like, you know, walking one of her dogs. I had like a lot of dog experience. I don't, or didn't have, but I mean, at that time, if that, I would say that, of course, just to go to New York. So that was kind of frightening to have like a big dog who I was to walk and control. So we went to, we walked to Central Park, took the dog for a walk, and brought him back, fed him. I would say that was kind of the main assignment, like walking the dog and giving the dog food. And I think because there's been a lot of guys there before taking care of the dog, they all been doing it in different ways. So the dog was pretty hard to handle, especially for me. I hadn't done it before, but I learned. But honestly, first couple of weeks, that was it.
Walking the dog and getting coffee. So not rocket science.
Not at all. But for
any
some reason,
blonde haired, blue eyed Swedish guy could have done the job.
Yes. I don't feel that special at all. It, like you said, it doesn't take much like brain capacity to do what I did. Obviously she wanted things her way, and she always thought she had the right to do everything. Like I remember like buying her like just a loaf of bread, and I bought the wrong one, in her eyes. And she was going to show me like, this is how you do it. So we walked back to the store. She took another loaf of bread, and we just walked out, and she walked it with really like powerful steps. And like, I have the power to do anything.
Wait, she didn't pay for the bread?
No, we just switched it out. I mean,
that's really weird.
Yeah. Just small things, but that showed her personality. She had the right to do everything. I really think so.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely makes sense given everything that, you know, is out there about her now and her power of persuasion, of convincing, you know, in some cases, young girls to apparently, you know, do some unsavory things. I guess she's a persuasive person. I think you sent me a message one time after you saw her on the news. And you characterized her as a scary lady.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, one time I did something that she didn't like somebody rang the doorbell and I opened for him, he was going he had a package and deliver a package, and there was some problem. I didn't know if he was at the right door, but I asked him to like come in, but there were two doors. So I let him in, and that was a huge mistake. Even though there was another door, she just like, who is this? And give me your ID. And then she took the delivery guy's ID, like took a copy of it. And she was furious. She was like, when she told him to leave, cause he was at the wrong door. She was furious at me. She was like, that could have been anyone. That could have been someone who wanted to kill me or anything. Anything could have happened. And then she said, I'm thinking about like sending you home. I have to think about it and like sleep on it, and we'll see tomorrow. And I felt so bad. I was like, oh no, I did a huge mistake. I'm going to get sent home. And I've been there for like at least a month. So I was into the like Manhattan groove, and I liked it. Then we had a talk in the morning, and she was like, well, that was really stupid. but I will give you another chance. I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you. So she definitely has that like evil thing. She makes small things into huge things. And she wanted me to feel bad, of course. So yeah, that was scary. That was like my scariest moment there.
So how much was this self-described socialite willing to pay for a Swedish live-in dog walker / coffee grabber at her multi-million dollar New York City townhouse? Make your guesses now.
I would work Monday to Friday, like get off at 5, and then just walk the dog Saturdays and Sundays. And for that, she would pay me $300 in cash every Friday. That's not much to live on in Manhattan, but I guess I got to live there too in a pretty big townhouse. But if you would to stay there and do good and come back, you would get more cash. You would get, I think, like 400 or 350, just a bump up. And then you would get more if you came back like a third time. So there was a system, most definitely, because I only went once. So I only got the 300. And then the last day when I was there, I got a bonus, $600 in cash as well, because I did good.
Had forgiven you for your previous transgressions and decided to give you a bonus. But how did you know that there was a system in place with the Swedish guys? How did you know that there were these like subsequent terms of employment? If you did a good job the first time, you could be invited back. How did you know that?
Well, I got told by the assistant. She told me, like, if you come back, and I think she told me when it was coming to an end, like, if you come back, you get this amount of money. I knew there was one guy before me, and before him, there was another one, and the assistant Dana, she talked openly about some of the guys, like they've been there for this amount of times and they would make this amount of money because they've been there more times. So it just sounded like there was a system. The assistant talked openly about it.
So, and where were you staying when you were living in the 5-story townhouse on the Upper East Side?
Well, I think it's a six-story. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Six-story. the basement. But it's not as bad as it sounds, but it wasn't as fancy as the other.
But it was a nice basement, as basements go.
Yeah, sure. And it was large as well. So it had a kitchen and my own toilet. And so, and I could close the door so I could be by myself also. So, but I got to stay at a fancy address. And usually when I took a cab home, all the cab drivers said, whoa, this is a very, are your parents rich? Because this is a very expensive address. So, but yeah, I got to stay there. But she had two doors to the townhouse. And I used the left door. That wasn't the main door. That was that wasn't the main door.
Service
the main
entrance. Door
exactly. Never seen that before, but in as far as apartments and townhouses go. But yeah, main door was a huge one, of course, but I used the side door.
Did she tell you this is the, how did you get in? You didn't have a key.
And no code. Yeah, she told me use that door, but sometimes when I walked with her, in and out, I took the same door. She was like, you can just walk with me. And I was like, whoa, move it up.
Yeah.
Rasmus was employed by Ghislaine for an initial term of 3 months. As it turned out, there was a very specific reason for that. And during that time, he began to test the boundaries of his and Ghislaine's relationship, and she began to test him by incrementally increasing his responsibilities.
I I gotta see this as a test. She wanted to test me. And she said, or show me, I don't know, but I can tell the story. She wanted me to bake a sponge cake. And she told me like, it was like kind of like a big, like hard project. And we went up to her kitchen and she was like watching me do the sponge cake. Like, well, how you do it, but most people had done it. It's not that hard. But then she made a huge deal out of it. She tasted it and she was like, oh, you made a really good sponge cake and like very good. And so I don't know what she wanted, if she like wanted to build some trust or whatever that was, but it was just, I remember actually thinking right then and there, like, this is weird. Like, why am I doing this in her kitchen? And why is she acting like this is such a big deal? I guess she didn't make, she didn't like make a lot of food, but she made it into a huge deal. And that was kind of the start of like the relationship between her and I getting better. Because in the beginning it was, I mean, I had tons of respect for her. I had all the time, but in the end, I could take out like some like turns. Like I could joke with her. I did it once. I made a joke, a Tinder joke. I don't remember exactly what it was, that she wouldn't get any hits on Tinder. And there was a guy there and he laughed and she was like, oh, like laughing. And she was like, I'll send you home for saying that. But it made me, I got confidence after a while. She had a party at her house and I was in charge of grilling the hamburgers. And after that, I mean, I was so nervous. She had all her friends there and I made everybody hamburgers. And after that night, I was done. I was sweaty. I was like, I was so tired. And I honestly gave all I had. And she said, you're amazing. Like, how couldn't I have seen this before? You actually shown what you can do. She made a huge deal out of that too. And after that, she was like, you have to come back. You have to do a burn and turn, which I guess is just, I can only stay there for 3 months because of the tourist visa. Then I would just go back to Sweden and come back in again. And I could stay for another 3 months. So she, after that, she really wanted me to come back. So I guess there was some like trust building between both her and I in both ways. And that felt rewarding because of course I wanted to get her respect, and mind you, at that time, like, I had no clue who she was.
But looking at it now, why do you think, or even back then, what is the significance of saying, I want you to come and work for me and live in my house, but don't say anything about it. Don't say that you're doing that when you enter the country. I'm paying you in cash. Why not just go get, you know, if she likes you and wants you to work for her, why not do it the legitimate way and just have you come over on a work visa and have it all be documented and done properly and above board? Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Why not? That raises a lot of questions, questions I did not have at that time. And just starting to get, I mean, I've been questioning like my whole visit just the last couple of weeks, when you've been like sending me stuff, and I actually have had time to think about the time I was there, the things I did, she did, the way she acted. And I mean, why I would love to have some answers, but with now I know what she have done in her past. I mean, this could have been some way of gaining my trust and involving me or any other Swedish guy in something bigger. Like, she might have a plan. This just might have been the beginning of the plan. I don't know, but it does raise a lot of questions. It does.
Of course, the 3 month term of employment is based on the fact that that's how long the tourist visa allows you to be in the country.
Yeah.
So she advised you to do the turn and burn, to go stay in Sweden for what, like a day, and then come back and do another 3 month term.
Well, there was another option. So she told me, if you have $10,000 in your account, you can apply for a 6 month like tourist visa. And she said it to me, like, everybody has like an extra $10,000. So she was like, you can just ask your parents to push that money over to your account. I was like, yeah, well, I'll ask.
The question, if she really liked you so much and she wanted you to come back, and that was the barrier, you know, was you having $10,000. Clearly we can assume that she had the money. She could have taken care of it if she wanted to, but that would again have been a paper trail from her to you.
But my plan was to come back for another 3 months, but it just didn't happen. And in hindsight, I'm pretty happy that I didn't go back, because I don't know what would have happened, honestly. And I also lived pretty hard. I lived the Manhattan lifestyle. So
what's the Manhattan lifestyle?
Well, I was out. Like I said, there was a lot of like free time. I was out. I was drinking a lot and just doing like stupid stuff. You could probably get away for a short amount of time, but not for months on end.
It's certainly a very odd arrangement, because you could hire anyone, literally anyone in Manhattan, to walk your dog and get you coffee. Literally. There are thousands upon thousands of, you know, people who probably fit the physical description that you're talking about, that she wanted Swedish guys who are blonde and have blue eyes. I mean, even, you know, non-Swedish blonde guys in New York, you can find them. Why would she be bringing people from Sweden to come and get her coffee and walk her dog?
I asked her in the beginning, like, why Swedish men? Like, have you been to Sweden? What's your connection? Because obviously I thought there was some connection to Sweden. And she was like, no, never been there, but would love to go. And that was it. There was no connection. So like you said, you can get anyone in Manhattan. The competition is so fierce. So I don't know.
So let's talk about Galen's assistant. Rasmus has referenced her several times. That assistant was Dana Burns. She's mentioned in a Daily Beast article as an Epstein insider who could bring Galen Maxwell down. There's a picture of her arm in arm with Epstein, his hand placed on her behind. She appears in the Epstein flight logs well over a dozen times. She's listed as the secretary/director of Maxwell's Terramar project. Dana told her former roommate in 2005 that she was dating Epstein and he was paying all her bills. Dana's name is associated with multiple of Maxwell and Epstein's addresses, as well as Galen's name associated with Dana's former address in New Jersey. Since Galen was implicated as an accomplice to Epstein, Dana hasn't surfaced. Despite all the evidence to the contrary, Galen claimed in a 2016 deposition not to know where Dana lives. When asked what Dana does for her, Maxwell replies, "She helps with my not-for-profit Ocean Foundation and any other related activities that I may have." No mention of hiring young Swedish men. Maxwell has been charged with 2 counts of perjury for that deposition. So I don't know what the significance is of that. What do you have any theory as to why she would be trying to, in her 2016 deposition, distance herself from the assistant or pretend that she didn't know where she lived? I mean, would you say that Galen knew where she lived?
At that time, sure. If she lived at the same place, I was there too, and she knew I was there. And I mean, they knew each other very well. I mean, they were actually interacting like they were on the same level. She didn't talk down down to her or anything. She got mad at the assistant, of course, but they acted like they really knew each other. So I would say that she knew where she was living, but I guess she must have known so many things, like being her assistant. I remember her booking her flights and doing everything for her. She actually did the hard part. I did the really easy stuff. So she was, and it's kind of tricky because I think we became pretty close and I liked her. So we were like talking every day. I was at her house for, I think, Memorial weekend. And like, she was really nice. So it was kind of tough, like, seeing her, that she might be involved or knew a lot of things, because I felt like I was left out, or that she knew a lot of things that I didn't and never told me. I mean, I would get her, but it just felt like fake. Like everything feels so fake. So that's why I have to reevaluate like this whole thing. And but it's like, I don't care about any relationship between me and Ghislaine, because it was nothing. But I actually had a relationship. Like, I liked the assistant. I did a lot. So that's the tough part.
Okay, so I think looking at the hiring the Swedish guys to come and get you coffee and walk your dog and live in your house. So if we're looking at reasons, what could be the reason that somebody would do this? One of the reasons that you would explore would be maybe it's some kind of, she's interested sexually, and, you know, this demographic, this type, you know, some people have a type, maybe this is her type. Did that ever cross your mind? Was there ever any indication that maybe she was interested in you in that way?
Well, I thought of it once. I went to the gym when I was there, and I remember buying a couple of like Nike tights, which I used to either work out in the gym or run with. And usually I worked out in the morning, then I came back and she was up, and I had these like tights. They were tights, and showed like my legs, and she looked at them. She was like, have you been to the gym? I was like, yes, I need to get more fit. And she was like, oh, you're already fit. And that was just the only vibe I ever got. And that happened, I think, 2-3 times. And either it was just like she liked what she saw, or she did not like what she saw. It's hard I don't know if she, well, it sounded like she liked it. And after the party, I remember telling Dana, like, Ghislaine came to this party and it was this and that. And Dana said, well, she asked me, the assistant, like, did something happen between you two? Which I said, no, nothing happened. So I don't know. There were small like implications of, oh,
that says it could be a possibility. If she's asking,
possibility, sure.
Yeah, it would be in the realm of possibility. Sure.
Yeah, it's not impossible, but that was the only time I ever thought about it. I mean,
did she ever give you any compliments, just like, you know, buttering you up or ingratiating you into her, you know, because it seems like she's the kind of person who would give, like, you know, who might be like, that might be one of her tools to like manipulate somebody into doing whatever she wants, to give compliments, you know, and be like, you're so, well, you said that she told you, you were so great, you have to come back. But, you know, like, was there anything else like that?
Well, in the beginning, there was none, I think. She was really like hard. But after a while, the only thing I ever heard was like in the end, but when I, like when she thought I did something well, she said like, oh, how could I ever thought anything else. You're so great. You're so good. Like, you have to come back. Like, you're amazing. But not that much, honestly, and nothing like how I looked or anything. Just, so no, I think if she wanted to have you, I think she used more the power side of her to manipulate, honestly, especially in the beginning. She used the power she had to, because I wanted to like have her, have her respect. So she was in control of me, most definitely.
And now the big question I have for Rasmus. Did he see anything that tipped him off? Did he notice anything that could have pointed to sexual crimes or trafficking? Did he see Jeffrey Epstein or any other famous people ripped from the headlines?
I wish I could have said yes, but no, I didn't pay that much attention. At that party, she had a lot of people over, but I didn't recognize any of them. But I mean, doesn't say they weren't famous people, just that I didn't know of them and I didn't pay that much attention to them because I was occupied doing my best. So, but she had people over. She had like this Norwegian guy who said he knew like a famous Swedish actor, but I have no clue who he was. But like powerful people too. She did not hang out with just anyone. That's for sure. It was a complete surprise, but I still have to go back and think what I saw, what I heard. And I think she must have been really good at hiding stuff because she had a cleaning lady there, so it was always clean. I mean, I barely like walked into her rooms, but I remember in her office, she had like a hand grenade sitting on her table. I thought that was weird. I mean, I was like, who has that? So I remember that. But and I remember when she had her boyfriend over, her room was really messy. Like there was stuff thrown everywhere. So, but other than that, nothing that like tipped me off. I mean, she must have been good at hiding stuff because that is what she does. So even though I lived with her, I did not suspect anything. So it was a complete surprise. It was. I think, well, first of all, I think I was young. I was self-centered, everything. I think I was thinking, oh, what an opportunity I have gotten. I have to like obey and I have to do the best of this. I wouldn't go investigating, looking for stuff. So that was one part of it. The other one was like, she actually told me like in the beginning, and I had so much respect for her. So I would just listen. And I mean, I lived, one part of my life was me like working there. A bigger part of my life was just living there, like doing stuff. So I was occupied in living my life. And I think that's the answer. But if I could go back with this knowledge, I mean, of course I would see with different pair of like eyes.
So would you say that, like, what was your feeling about her as a person while you were there? Did you like her? Did you think she was funny? Did you think she was cool? Or was it just the powerful woman persona was the main thing that you got from her?
Yeah, definitely. Especially when we spoke, I thought she was very like, she said exactly what she wanted to and not that many laughs. And I was scared of her. And she acted out in that way too. She used this like powerful, evil, like scary lady. She was like playing that part too. And she was probably someone else when she was in private with like her friends. But in front of me, she came off as a scary lady. I mean, that softened a bit in the end. Like we were at the party playing pool, it was more of a relaxed situation, but I was still on edge. Like I have to perform. I have to be like up to her standard. So I couldn't relax at all. But then I guess we're just talking about like random stuff. And I think she always treated me like she was my boss, and she treated me that way. So not funny. I guess she was funny.
At but all. She did laugh when you gave her a zinger and told her that no one would like her on Tinder.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of the only time.
And that she was, had that's this, a bold like, move. Why would you say that to her?
I don't know. Like I got a feeling. I went with it. It worked.
So, back to the first night I met Rasmus. He came into the bar where I worked, a ping pong club called Spin on 23rd Street. He opened a tab with a credit card that had no name, bearing only the initials GM.
She probably had a lot of cards, but that was like the card I was given to like buy food or like stuff she told me to buy. It could be like scented candles in a really expensive store on Upper East Side. So I always had that card. And like you said, yeah, it was her initials.
And did you find that strange?
No, I probably should have, but no. I mean, nothing, I think, came as a surprise. I was just, this is how rich people live. This is what they do. And I just swallowed it whole. Because remember, it wasn't my first time in America, but it was my first time in New York, and first time being with working for a rich person. I thought, well, this is just how rich people act. If they can have a card with just their initials, sure. I mean, why not? I wasn't very investigative, but I don't know that much. But no, that there's not like a easy answer to that one. Why would she have that? Well, she had something to hide. She don't want to. Well, I remember because, like I said in the beginning, they told me you cannot tell anyone that you're working for her. So obviously, she knew she was she was very famous and didn't want to be seen that much. So the card was maybe just a part of not being out there.
So that reminds me, she was involved, I believe, in this lawsuit with Virginia Giuffre at the time when you were there. And I think you told me that she had instructed you not to speak to the press if the press were outside of the house.
Yeah, one day, exactly. She told me, or the assistant, can't remember, but they said there might be press outside. If they ask you anything, like you don't know anything. And they said it like casual, like it happens from time to time. And that I bought because, I mean, she's famous and maybe the press there. So I did not ask any questions. And if I would have, I don't know how many, like what kind of answer I would have gotten, but I was instructed not to talk to the press.
So again, no Googling at that time, no Googling from you.
I feel so stupid. I mean, I should have, but I mean, that was me at 24. I was immature and I was just not thinking.
I understand. I mean, I really do, because of course I was in my 20s. I was essentially the same age as you when I was in New York, doing whatever I was doing. And of course I didn't ask a lot of questions either. I would go with the flow. Maybe that's,
yeah.
Again, anything's possible when you're, you know, out living it up in Manhattan.
That's the feeling.
So why did Rasmus even reach out to me when he saw Ghislaine on the news in 2019 to let me know who it was he worked for? How do I know without a doubt that Rasmus was really there at Ghislaine's house? Well, I know because he took me there. He took me to the townhouse at 116 East 65th Street between Park and Lexington Avenues on the night we met in 2015.
To my defense, I was drunk and it was my last night there. That was my excuse. I knew I was pushing boundaries like to the max, but I have gotten used to like pushing the limits for quite a while there. Like I was like getting like kicks or highs like And that this was the next step, and you knew nobody was there. So,
okay. So you and I were going to go like have a drink. I lived in a horrible apartment. So I was like, there's no way in hell no one can come to this place. It's so bad. You took it upon yourself to, you know, invite me to come over to this place. And it actually, as it happened, was not that far from where my horrible apartment was. My horrible apartment was on East 60th Street. And I believe this place was, I think, 65th or 6th.
Yes, 65th.
Okay. So again, this is not something I see every day either. I had been in large apartments, large residences in Manhattan. I had a friend, you know, who had grown up on the Upper East Side, and I'd been to his parents' place, which was huge. I'd seen huge apartments, but I never had seen a place like this in New York. I mean, it was like a 5 or 6 story townhouse. You don't see that every day. So it was unusual to me as well. But looking back on this, it's a little scary to think what, like you said, you felt like you could get away with, you know, having a guest over that night because you were leaving anyway the next day. Mm-hmm. And she was not there. She was out of town. But knowing now what we know about her, what she was involved in, her reaction to even a delivery guy coming in the door, what could have happened to me or you if she had come in and seen that you had brought somebody there, and especially someone you didn't even know, someone who's a bartender at the bar where you were having drinks. I mean, what would she have said? What might have happened?
It's a scary thought. It is. I mean, I don't want to think that thought, but it didn't end up that way. But I mean, she's capable of doing some sick things. So.
And you did not invite me to the basement. You invited me in and we went to, you know, like the nicest area of the house, like to go check out the balcony and go just like, you know, looking around at this beautiful place. You, in fact, I didn't even know that you lived in the basement until the other day, and you told me that.
I had no idea. I guess I wanted to like play it off as, look, even I got that it was a spectacular thing, a spectacular townhouse. So of course, I wanted to show like the best parts. It felt right at the moment, so that's what I did. I think that this whole thing with having Swedish young men over must have been the start of something bigger, like bait, or I don't know what she had in, like what kind of plans she had. But if I would to have gone back, we had a better relationship and probably something to work at. I don't know what she could have asked me to do, but I guess
like there was an incremental, maybe like tests, if you will, of like responsibility for you. And they had been increasing.
They were increasing. Like I'm sure there would be a next step. And how far would it go? I mean, she obviously is a master of manipulation and has done some horrible things. So I wouldn't be surprised about anything.
But so, well, she's been accused of, you know, grooming and recruiting young women to have sex with Jeffrey Epstein. She's been accused of participating in some orgy activity with Epstein and other young girls. Yeah. She's been accused of giving sexual massages to like girls as young as 14. You know, how did that make you feel when you found out that you had been in such close contact and living with this person?
Well, it's unreal. It's totally unreal. I mean, it's hard for me to even imagine, even though there's a paper and people saying that she has done those things, and I believe them, but it is to be being close proximity to a person who has done those things. it is just hard to imagine. And the thing is, I'm not surprised. It sounds weird, but I'm not surprised that she has done those things, because she gave off that energy. Like, with power, you can like do anything. So, but it feels, like I said, I had to reevaluate my whole time there, but it's still, it's unreal that I've even been there, that I met her, talked to her, lived with her. It's hard to explain.
So you haven't heard from anyone, of course, since when? When was the last time you heard from anyone connected to her?
Maybe 2-3 years ago. I remember having Dana on Instagram, and we spoke not that much, but we did. And now her Instagram like handle is gone. So that was the last time, maybe 2-3 years ago. I haven't seen any like news or anything about this whole thing with Swedish like young men being staying with her. So like, what's going to happen? Like, how will she react? Like, why should I care? But that was still, I mean, this is probably news to a lot of people, except like the people I've told. But this is I'm just interested that more people doesn't know about this.
Thanks for tuning into this very special episode of Diaries of a Pretender. Thank you to Rasmus for trusting me to be the first to tell this story. And head over to patreon.com/Raiden to access exclusive bonus content from this episode and hear Rasmus's story of the Marvel movie premiere after party Ghislaine took him to. If you have information about other Swedish young men hired by Ghislaine Maxwell, email me at podcast@Raiden.me. I'd love to hear from you. Music featured in this episode is by Joshua Specht, Sam Barsh, Falls, and Wastelander. And this podcast is written, produced, edited, and hosted by me, Raiden Greer. See you next time.